Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello, welcome back to another episode. And as promised, Tim Eglin coming up on the podcast later today. First though, Matt and I got a few little bits to talk about. Obviously, yeah, we've had the Berlin Marathon, a few signings to the M11 track club. And of course, Jakob Ingebrigtsen seems well and truly rattled by the Sunday podcast. But Jakob, if you are listening, feel free to come on and join us. So.
We'd love to have him on. I mean, we kind of love them equally, right? We got to back our boy Josh Kerr in this situation. I think last time we spoke, I think it was a Friday, but I hadn't watched the episodes yet, and then obviously over the weekend watched them and stuff, and we shared them our small feature on Amazon Prime, so we're happy. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, Kerr is, what have they raced, maybe four or five times in the last couple of years, and when it counts, Kerr's done him over. And so you are starting to say that Kerr is, when it comes to the 1500 a mile specifically, Kerr beats him more often than not. Like, he's better than him. Like, and obviously Jakob will never admit that. He would never like to. But at the moment, if you go on the last 2 years, or no, the last 12 months, I guess, from Budapest to Paris, bottom line.
It is, mate. It is. But I think it's great for the sport. But it was really interesting to see in the documentary, I thought. So it's episode 4 for those of you
definitely
who haven't watched it.
The press conference and stuff afterwards, yeah, was good.
Because I just think, like, I think he gives off this air that he doesn't care. But I think the way he then spoke about it definitely applied to me that he really does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think as well, it just went behind the dynamics of these guys as well. And I think, you know, Jakob is, there's a lot of, and this is what we spoke to Josh about all those months ago. There's a lot of people on the circuit who want to get along with Jakob, who are a bit starstruck of the guy, and who love him because they're fans of sport, just like me and you. Like, we love him as well. But, you know, Kerr is not one of those people. And I think Jakob does not like the fact that Kerr kind of needs, and I think Kerr needs to go into, like, Kerr needs to have that relationship with the guy in order to, like, try and beat him as well, to get the best out of himself. Kerr needs to, man, it's like in football, man. Gary Neville was only saying the other day, like, you need it, you know, Man United, Liverpool rivalries, you need to hate the opposition in order to, like, go beat them. I've always thought that as well.
the athletics is just a bit too soft sometimes.
It doesn't happen. You know, you see training partners competing with each other, and that's what's so great about the sport. But I do feel like when it comes to head-to-head for the biggest stage of all, you know, the Olympic Games, you need to hate one another to really do them over, I think, to really get the best.
Yeah, or at least be in a mindset where as soon as the gun goes, you can hate them for 3.5 minutes, right?
Yeah, it's very hard to be.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, switch. But I guess the best can. right? They can switch from friends to, you look at the likes of like Kerr and Whiteman and stuff when they raced at British champs over the past. They spoke about having that ability to switch, and not ha you know they don't need to hate each other all season long. But hey, great for the sport.
Great for us as well, a bit of air time, so we can't complain at all. But yeah,
But today, yeah, updates. Yeah, Jakob is no closer to coming on the Sunday podcast. Sorry to disappoint.
if anyone does have any contacts, just let us know.
Right, man,
We'll
what
get
happened last week?
Yeah, man, let's get into Berlin Marathon. Obviously, look, speaking of the Olympics and stuff, Kelly Thackeray, she's back post. I'm sure what she would have kind of said was a disappointing run in Paris. And she's back, second fastest Brit of all time, 2:21, paced by her husband. Looked like she's timed that race well, and obviously, like, I'm sure she'd have wanted to do it in the Olympics, but if it doesn't go your way and you've got still the shape in your legs, I think why not capitalize when you've got Berlin to as an opportunity.
Yeah, a huge run from her. I think it's tough in an Olympic year because I think a lot of people be like, why can't you get it right for Paris? But then I think, just to come back and run that time at that stature, I think just shows her class. We know her potential in the marathon as well. I think is quite scary. What she can do, how long will it be? Like I could see Callie breaking 2:20 at some point in the next 18 months. And I don't think I've seen a British marathon runner. Like I wouldn't say that about any other British marathon runners right now. That might be unfair.
No, I think that's a fair point, mate. And well, look, she's the second Brit, fastest Brit of all time, right? As we just said, so she's earned that, I guess, that expectation with the run the other day. And look, we're hoping to get back on the podcast in the next couple of weeks, so we'll ask her herself, like, what how fast she does think she can go. But I think, yeah, it's a great bounce back. And I think, like, it would have been so easy to just be like, look, Paris hasn't gone my way. I'm gonna take some time off. And just chill out and I'll wait till next time. But actually now she's come out, what would it have been, 6 weeks later? Something like that anyway.
Literally, that is about 6 weeks, which is maybe 7 weeks. Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, for that reason, actually, I struggled to get up for the Berlin Marathon. Not wake up to watch it. I mean, just like get excited about it. Just because I was like, I really enjoyed the Olympic marathon. For me, that was one of the highlights, both on the men's and women's side of the whole games. And so the thought of, like, just watching a bit of a procession, another fast ma like a fast marathon, I wasn't super excited for. But it's still good races and an incredible run from Cali. I mean, up at the front, I guess. It was just standard procedure for Berlin Marathon, really.
Yeah, I think so, mate. And also
Milkesa,
think.
I'm just talking about the winners. Milkesa wins in 2:03. We're just seeing, 2:02, 2:03. It's standard unless we see one of the really heavy hitters get after a world record. This is what happens, and Katima on the women's as well. Winning in sort of 2:16, and again, obviously, we saw a terrific race last year in Berlin on the women's side, that 2:11 world record. But yeah, it's just routine kind of major city marathon for me.
Yeah, and it's just a bit like the Diamond League, isn't it? Those last few races on the Diamond League circuit, I think it is a bit difficult as fans to get super excited about. But of course, one thing we can get excited about is the cross country, which will be coming to us very, very soon. We've got Cardiff Cross Challenge, what, 6 weeks away? 5 weeks away, I believe. And then
Yeah,
Liverpool just a couple of
something like
weeks
that.
after that. So, look. A few league matches coming up. First league match is next weekend, so we're going to start seeing a few people who might be kind of aiming for that Liverpool team. We're going to start seeing how they shape up if they choose to open. Obviously, we got Tim open today, like Jack Rose, someone who in previous years has literally just done a league match and then rolled into Liverpool and taken down the whole thing. So some people go that route. Some people don't even race. some people go to Cardiff and have an absolute kind of ding dong with some of the other people trying to make the team, and then they either back it up or they kind of, I guess, peter off, go over to boil over, coming into Liverpool. So it's interesting seeing how athletes approach this next kind of 7 weeks or so.
Absolutely. Some results coming your way. And then on the major marathon as well, we got Chicago next week, which, you know, again, stellar lineup. You bet there's going to be fast times. It's heavily American, obviously. So there's not really too many people to report who are doing it. Daniel Benio is doing it, by the way. Phenomenal track runner making his debut there. We've got Amos Kipruto as well on the men's side. I think he's got two silvers, Boston and maybe Tokyo previously at the majors. 203 man. So yeah, you've got three men sub 204 over in Chicago. And you've got two women inside 216, three inside 217. Chepngetich, Kabede, Chepkoskaya, bouncing back and getting involved as well. So the women's, it's going to be two electric races. By the way, Mary Ngugi Cooper as well, the lady who won Great North Run, the one coached by Steve Cram's doing it. Her best is 220, I think, somewhere around there. So it'll be cool to see if she can break that 220 mark. Obviously, it was a pretty nice win at Great North. So Chicago is one to look forward to for a major marathon. I think it will be pretty similar to Berlin, though, in the sense that we haven't got a British interest, and it'll be fast up the front. But any records, I don't think we're going to see any records. Though those men's and women's world records in the marathon now are just so fast, and it's going to take, you know, a bit of a freak.
It's going to take Valencia to start with, and then what's next, I guess. So yeah, obviously those ones coming up later in the winter. But mate, that's pretty much it in terms of like races to preview and stuff. It's almost a bit of a quiet week. Road relays will be happening as you're listening to this. So it'll be interesting to see how people got on with that. But yeah, let's chat about Tim Eglin, because we chatted to him this week, obviously just about the enormous success he's had with the likes of Jack Rowe, with the likes of Will Barnacote, with Neve Brown. And yeah, it's just, it still goes under the radar, doesn't he? Really still goes under the radar.
He goes so under the radar for me. There's so many guys in this country who I'm surprised Tim's inbox is not jam-packed and people asking to be coached by him, because he's one of three coaches, he's one of three British men to have coached someone to run under 1305. You know, in that company, Alan Story and John Addison, who coached Dave Moorcroft. And, you know, and obviously we're in a different era now. Like, you know, Tim said himself, he doesn't compare himself to those guys. Like, they were way out there in the coaching world. But like, he has developed Jack Rowe from a really, really good, like from a strong junior, but to a, like, and just all through the ranks to, you know, to national champion on the mud, like you said, at Liverpool, to running, being able to run the half, being able to run the 5K, like super range. And he's developed that guy over the last 4 years since COVID, really. And he came back from America and he's doing the same with Will Barnacote. You know, to have a 21-year-old break 13:20 is pretty special. And then Neve Brown as well. And like, he's just, you know, he'll talk about his approach and his philosophy to running, and he's very, very patient. Nothing happens fast, overnight with Tim. And that's his philosophy, and rightly so, because he's got so much success. But his athletes never get injured. They never really seem to have that bad of a race. And so he's just doing a lot right. And it does just surprise me that, you know, and that's why we wanted to get him on the podcast, to be honest, because I think it's been overdue. He's one of the most underrated coaches in the UK right now.
Yeah. And I think perhaps one of the reasons he's so overlooked is, I guess, his kind of attitude around the athletes and how much it is about them. And of course it is about them. And he really credits them as I guess the people who are kind of carving their own success and going and running it. But he's very humble in terms of that. And I think maybe if he shouted about it a bit more, perhaps he would get a bit more people noticing. So hopefully, yeah, like you say, mate, us putting him,
sorry,
on the podcast,
Tim, if your inbox is now full.
Yeah. So hopefully, I think, yeah, he gets the credit he deserves, because yeah, he's been doing a brilliant job with those guys, and I'm sure he'll continue to do so with them and also many more to come as well.
Yeah, he has. And I think you know, when you look at our top British 5K people, you know, George Mills overseas, Sam Aitken overseas, people like Charles Hicks, Paddy Deeber overseas, you know, and Jackson next guy, and he's proving, you know, him and Barno proving that you can really reach a high level here in the UK under kind of old school training methods. But I think he's also learned a lot, Tim, and he's not kind of set in his ways. He's been adapting things a lot. So great podcast. And it's fitting with the road relays as well. I'm not sure he's going to get that success story to sweeten the podcast for you guys on Sunday. Yeah, we don't think Aldershot are going to win that. But I'm sure he's hoping. And of course, the women, though, they'll probably win. And he is the women's team manager as well. So it's fun to hear his sort of how his coaching journey started as well. But, mate, that's pretty much it. I mean, a little bit of news. I guess everyone would have seen by now. M11 Track Club gets stronger. It sounds like this is really... When M11 sort of started forming last... Or like, when did they come out with that name? I don't know. But I almost thought like it was just an Instagram account. But it seems to be that this is like a legit professional club now. And yeah, they're going to have some men next year or this year. Benjamin Robert, Ethan Hussey and Harry Colbert, under 20 Irishmen, by the way. It's like a 350, 14, 18 guy, I think. Pretty good on the cross. But Robert and Hussey are big names to join this group. Trevor Painter's group.
They are, and it does make sense. Like, it does make sense for someone like Hussey to go over there. And I guess similar to what you just said about Tim and making it work in the UK, so I guess it's nice to see him not thinking, oh, I need to go overseas to get the right training program. There's world-class groups in the UK. There are world-class coaches in the UK. So let's make the most of them. So, yeah, I guess that's the news. But enjoy this episode with Tim. And we'll catch you very soon because we have got a whole host of guests lined up. We recorded with one today and we won't tell you who, but yeah, we got a whole host of guests coming up in the next few weeks. So look forward to those. We'll catch you very soon. Okay, Tim, first off, just welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. We wanted to actually kind of, I guess, roll it back a bit to how you first got into coaching to start us off.
Yeah, it's the simplest thing is, and it sounds really grandiose, is my life took me there. And at the age of 11, I started running. Right? And I was like any other little boy, I played football. Everybody played football. I went to a secondary school, state school, and blimey, somebody gave me a chance to run. And I've never been so inspired in my life. So it was this thread that took me up through running from an 11-year-old to getting injured and all sorts of stuff, being part of AFD all that time, going right the way through university, through my career and everything else. And there was another thread of life, which was my career, which took off in my 20s and whatever, consulting, all sorts of stuff like that. IT consultancy, into management consultancy, board level positions, etc. And then I guess the final thread was family. So my son, Sam, played football. He was six. Somebody had to coach the football team. And I did. And suddenly from a position of being absolutely overwhelmed by the knowledge of people and thinking, I could never be a coach. I was too shy. I couldn't see how I could do it. You know, and suddenly I was given the opportunity to look after youngsters. And it was like, I couldn't believe it. It was such fun. Mm-hmm. And so when Sam then got into athletics, there's a kind of a longer chain to how there's a bit more to it after that. But those things came together and I was in a situation. I'm an enthusiast and you guys have got a challenge today. Anybody who knows I'm on here today, stop Tim talking. I'm an enthusiast and I loved it and I loved being around runners. And there I was back with the people I love with an opportunity to get involved and help people, which the older I've got, the more important that's become to me. Mm. And I just love every component of it. To start with, I didn't have many opportunities because, to be blunt, there wasn't a vacancy at AFD. There's a bloke called Mick Woods and he pretty much knows what he's doing, to put it mildly. And so I helped a bit with him, but Mick likes to run his group. And you know, that's always been the power of AFD, these big groups. So for me to arrogantly go in and say, I'm going to set up another one, would have been absolutely the wrong thing to do. So I got involved and engaged. He was keen for me to do some team management. So I got into team management to start with. You know, there's a group of people out there, a lot of people out there, who don't know me as a coach. They know me as a team manager. So I've been team manager for under 13 to senior women on the women's side, under 13 to under 17 on the men's side, since 2011. So, and to them, I'm that nutcase who runs around in the AFD jacket, cheering everybody on. And that's what they know me as. Mm. But that was my opportunity to at least do some stuff that was coaching related. Mm. I was there, you know, mixed around the course, and I'm doing stuff, and I'd help him out when he wasn't there for sessions and whatever. And I could stand and watch. That's huge education in itself. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I loved every moment of it. And I got some opportunities with some individuals as they kind of went to university or did stuff, and people started approaching me, and I bit their hands off. It's the honest truth, because I just was so keen to coach. Yeah. So keen.
One of the questions was going to be, you know, did coaching come from a passionate place, or was it more of a hobby, or did you think you could do a better job than someone else? I think you've answered that, to be honest. And then, so like I said, if you go to university, they're sort of asking for your advice. You were super keen to get involved. Were you worried about treading on people's toes? Were you worried about how it might be received? Because club politics is, you touched on a little bit, is a tricky place, because especially for a volunteer as well.
Yeah. For me, I had a huge advantage, right? As an 11-year-old, I turned up and there was this senior athlete called Woods, right? So I'd known Mick since I was 11. Mm. So in terms of politics within the club, Mick had been a senior when I was a kid. He'd been a team manager as I started getting into senior athletics. I raced against him in senior athletics. We had a history. Mm. And I've got huge respect for Mick. And when I first started getting involved, I said to him, look, I'd like to help out with coaching. And and he said, look, it works because I do it. And I said, look, from the start, we had an agreement right away. I said I would not coach people in the AFD environment. I would not tread on his toes, do stuff, because I touched on it just now. It felt like an ego trip for me to do that.
Right.
So yeah. When people came, that's why it's always been people coming to me. I have never approached anybody to coach them. So I don't tread on anybody's toes because they come to me. Mm-hmm. And it was people kind of around the edges who came through. I built a relationship with, and they came to me, and I got to know a lot of people. People would come and chat to me, seniors down to the youngsters, mm-hmm. and whatever, parents as well, because there was a lot, you know, when Mick's got a huge group, he likes to deal with the athletes. I would deal with the parents. So there was always a role there for me. And we worked together doing it. And we've worked, I'm proud to say, you know, I think of him as somebody I've worked really closely with. You've had him on. There's just so much you can. But yes, I've always been conscious that for me, I'm in it to help the people. So if I'm making their life worse by getting in the way and being an aggravation to create bad relationships with other people, I'm not helping them. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to do that. Yeah, that's my passion, is the people. And I want to help them. You know, it's just great. How can it be better than finding who are the most enthusiastic people on the planet? Youngsters. And youngsters who found a sport they passionately love. It's just brilliant to be around them. So, yeah, I wanted to do more, but I waited my time. And, you know, people like Jack came just as he was going off to the States. I'd known him for a while. And that was all great. You know, he came... It was just at the end of St. Mary's. He was going to go off. And I coached him for, what, 3-4 months? It's been quite a long journey, because actually I was looking at it the other day. When he first came to me, he'd run 14:38.
Yep.
That summer, we got him down to 14:10 in a thunderstorm in Houston. He knocked 15 seconds off while he was in the States. And then the rest of it down to 13:04.
we've done together. So that's been from 1438 down to 1304. And it's been a hell of a ride. You know, it's been such fun.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get into a bit more kind of on yours and Jack's relationship. But look, you mentioned kind of really enjoying the youngsters, wanting to help people. At what point did you start to kind of realize or believe that you could be coaching at this elite level, this high performance level that Jack is at?
Again, it evolved through life, Ollie. It's part of me didn't coach early on, because I saw such fantastic, the coach at AFD when I was there, people, unfortunately, have forgotten his name almost, a guy called Ron Stonehouse. You know, he took Christina Boxer from an 11-year-old to run 2 minutes for 800, first woman to run sub 2 minutes in Britain, ran 4 minutes flat. I saw people like that and thought, I could never be that. I think what happened was it's progressive. I got involved with the youngsters at football and then in the club. But I also found that when I interacted with people, they listened and I had a contribution to make, and they came back to me. And so I could see things. I'm a very analytical person. I plan a lot and I could see how things came together, and I could see things that I could bring to that party. I couldn't know at that stage how well that would happen and how you know, where that would take me. And I think that first few months with Jack, to I'd helped a few people and nudged people in the right direction, but to put it into practice in a very short time frame made me realise, well, hang on, this does work. I have got something to give these people. Mm. I have got something that is of value. And that's, you know, it's evolved from that. If you'd said to me then, oh, you'll have a 1304 guy, you'll have an under 23 who can run sub 1320, I'd have said, wow. And yeah, I'm here now and I'm thinking I can make them better still. And I know what I'm going to do. And it's an evolution. And I think that's really important. I try and get across to people in the lives. Your lives evolve. It's really important to learn as you go along. You know, you're a sum total of your experiences. Those are really important. Learn from them. Take those bits into what you do. So to be an elite coach, to me, is part of that progression. And I've got here and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, oh, what do we do to, you know, what would turn 1304 into sub 30 minutes? What would turn a 21-year-old running 1319 into somebody else to run sub 13 minutes, you know, what would take somebody into an elite 10K, a marathon? It's those things. I already know. I'm a big believer in you have a framework and a basis for things and you build out from there. And that's what I've got. And what I've built out is modules onto that. Some of that is a module that takes you to an elite level. Some of it is a module that takes you into really good club runner level. Yeah, and some of those things, most of them the same, but there are tweaks and things, and different events are all different tweaks. But I think, Ollie, it is about you get there. I cannot believe there could be a coach out there who arrogantly thought that they would start and produce world-class athletes. If they are, they're very different from me. Very different.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I just want to quickly talk about your coaching philosophy, and you talk about those modules and potentially how it's evolved over the years as well, but you certainly strike me as someone who is a big believer in old school British distance running. You've come through that route yourself, studied at Cambridge and stuff. So, but how is that, you know, kind of how have you took the best bits of old school British distance running and now kind of using it in the modern day with the likes of Rowe and Barnico?
I think this is the really the nub of my coaching, in essence, is when you say putting together the bits. I'm a huge believer in a holistic picture, right? And if I see people making mistakes, it's almost always because they magpie. They go and look at, oh, that bloke's done that thing over there. That's a really good session. Oh, he does a bit of double threshold over here. Oh, he does this, she does that. And they put together something that doesn't fit together. So my big thing is that holistic picture and bringing the bits together. Okay, that might be good,
but it worked for them, but it doesn't work in the context of doing this. Yeah, how many people do you see saying, oh, they run their steady running so slowly? Oh, yeah, because they're doing their sessions so blooming hard. Or they run their steady running so hard. Or they're doing fewer sessions. It's that balance. To me, the key thing is bringing those bits together. And the core of the pie is an endurance base. You know, I smiled when you said old school, because I don't even know what old school means. To me, it's always an evolving picture. But at the heart of it is a huge endurance aerobic base. It doesn't matter how you get there, what you do, and different people have different approaches for it. And they're all as valid as one another if they succeed. I don't care. You know, I wouldn't knock somebody who does things differently than me if it's working. You know, it works. But at the heart of them is that endurance base, that aerobic base, getting enough running or cross training done if you know you need to, because that's how your body set up is and everything else. But that has to sit, and you build out from there. You've got to get that. And I think that's what's the triathlete, you know, when you say about learning things from different things, that's what the triathletes gave to us a number of years back, was that I watched youngsters like Richard Allen, say at Aldershot, come in as a triathlete, and I'd watch him do sessions with people, and he'd come off the rep and he'd be recovered in about half a minute. The aerobic base was so huge because they can do more at a younger age because they're not bashing their bodies. They can do the swimming. They can do the biking. They've got this huge aerobic base. I watched Richard do a road relay leg at one stage where he took George Duggan apart on last leg at the Tunbridge. And he basically psyched him out. He caught him so quickly in the first lap when we were doing laps at Crystal Palace. And then just sat on him because he went too hard early on, but he psyched George out by catching him, took a rest for about 100 meters, and then he'd recovered and he was gone again. Poor George, George wasn't fit at the time. I'll be totally fair to George, but it's that aerobic base. It's that aerobic base. You cannot get anywhere away from building that. And then, you know, you build, I'm a believer in long reps, in what nowadays people call tempo and threshold and all that kind of stuff, and layering that on top. I'm a big believer that underneath that is the old-fashioned Lydiard stuff. You're building almost a periodized structure, except nowadays we don't do it in such discrete chunks. We tend to build all of it and we change the focus through the year. So there's a bigger aerobic and base building to start with. You start to get more strength and speed and whatever, and then you sharpen off and race and everything else. But it's just a change in focus. It's not, right, it's all endurance now. It's all hills now. It's all whatever. So very much philosophy of it needs to fit together. And that's what I'm always looking at. Where are the gaps? Do they fit together?
You mentioned obviously people like Lydia's training and stuff like that. Do you think this is like kind of your own coaching ideas and like Matt said, your modules that you mentioned? Has this come from reading or doing, observing, or is it a bit of everything really? Like, did you always kind of study these people when you were an athlete yourself, or is it something that kind of later in coaching you start to pay closer attention to?
Interest, Ollie, I think, as much as anything else, and experience. So listening to Ron Stonehouse when he coached me, Matt mentioned about, you know, being in the Cambridge environment, meeting a guy called Mike Turner, who was a phenomenal cross-country runner and ended up doing all sorts of stuff. The early stages, they were doing scientific stuff. He was one of the first to go to altitude before the Mexico Olympics. And then he was just about 40 when I arrived, and he'd been second in the national, but he was still an incredible athlete. And I beat him first race up. And people said to me, by the end of this term, he'd be beating all of us. I'm like, no. And he'd been taught something called incremental progressive training. And they didn't know how it worked, but they knew it worked. So every week was a little bit harder than the week before.
every week they were just moving things forward. They weren't moving all the things at once. They move a bit of volume, they'd move a bit of intensity, but it was just progressive. And at the heart of everything I do is that word, progressive. That's how you improve year on year. That's how you don't get injured. That's how you do stuff. It's progressive. It's not huge jumps. People want to make huge jumps, but and sometimes you'll make huge improvements, but you also sometimes fall off a cliff. Yeah. So to me, it's stuff I've picked up as I've gone along. All the time, I've got my model and my I'm a mathematician at heart. So you model the world. And so I mean, you get a core model and you evolve it. My model has moved through time and it just moves and you learn new bits and you enhance it and you challenge yourself. You know, I'm my own worst, biggest critic. What have I got right? What have I got wrong? How do I improve this? So the model evolves all the time, but the core of it is always there. It's an endurance base.
Yeah, I think you touched on that progression, and that's something that, you know, Jack, Neve, Will, they've all done so well. And as far as I can remember, Jack's pretty much never been injured, maybe a couple days off here and there. Barnico, I've never heard of like long extended periods of injury either. And I was going to ask you, you know, how have you been able to keep these guys so injury free and constantly improving as well year on year on year? But you've kind of answered it in that question a little bit.
Yeah, I think Jack's a very robust guy, right? So he's lucky with that. So, I wasn't, you know, I got injured all the blooming time. But there is, and I think I got a phrase that I bore people with, which is tautology. You are where you are. That's another mistake people make. Oh, I was expecting to do a lot of training this week. Yeah, but you can't because you've been injured, right? So we progress from where you were. But in terms of the totality, it's not just an integrated training approach, but it needs to be integrated with your life. And that's a common feature I found. And, you know, I teased somebody at one stage and I said, so when you start training, have you got a battery pack that you put on, especially that you've reserved all this energy to go and do your training? Well, reality is, no, you haven't. And if you've had a day either at work or at school, university or whatever, or personal life that has left you in a mess or has left you tired, don't overcook it. Do not. And I think quite often, and when I looked back on it, I got injured and ill because I was run down. You know, I went to university. We talked the other day about the pressures in some of the university system. And I understood, my coach, this guy that I looked up to, had written out every day's coaching for the whole of first term. And I was letting him down if I didn't do every day. No matter how knackered I was, no matter what was going on, I was letting him down. And I was ill all the time, you know, because I just didn't take account of the change in my lifestyle. I didn't take account of having to look after myself. I'd never done any of that. And so I think being realistic about your circumstances, being realistic about how tired you are, integrating your running into your life is really important to me around the injury side of stuff, because that's where you get bitten. And a lot of my athletes will probably tell you that I frustrate them by telling them to stop or to do less. And it's because I am naturally cautious in those things. And I, you know, you have to push the boundaries. You have to be tired, otherwise you don't improve. But you mustn't be run down to a state that, you know, and it's just looking for those things and you don't always get it right. You know, they pick up and then being right on top of things, communicating regularly, having the relationship with somebody that they feel comfortable to tell you. The last thing a distance runner ever wants to tell you is that they've got a niggle or an injury, because it's almost like I did it. If you admit to it, it's real. If you tell somebody, it's real. Whereas if you keep it in the back of your mind and don't tell anybody, it's not real. It'll go away. And it's having the confidence and having the strength of relationship that people will talk to you about those things. Because, you know, Matt, from your own coaching, people don't want to tell you. They don't want to tell you. Don't you find?
Absolutely, mate. You have to pry out of them and just keep your senses.
Yeah.
And it's just, and so I think it's a lot of things, but it's been part of it and the incremental thing and learning each time. People have asked me, oh, Jack ran 13.04 last year. Did you change his training? Yeah, we did.
Mm.
So why didn't, and the obvious question somebody then asks is, so why didn't you do that the year before? Because you could only do what you did last year because of the stuff you did the year before. And you could only do the stuff the year before because of the stuff you did the year before that. And that's what progressive means. That's that you're always looking to move forwards and there's always things you're learning all of the way along the line. But you're a better, stronger athlete. You're building that platform. Jackie is a platform that he's built. And that's really, really important. Really important.
Yeah, one thing you obviously mentioned then was kind of this idea of the coaching relationships you have with your athletes. One thing we wanted to ask you was, how do you manage to do this so successfully when largely you're coaching some of these guys remote? So I think about kind of Jack's not always kind of around, yeah, like so close to you. Will the same, and Neve, I think so as well. So how do you manage to kind of still maintain that communication when they might be off on training camps or not necessarily kind of around the corner for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it is a challenge, but a huge part of why I do it is the relationship. So actually, when you've got a strong relationship, you can be detached. The difficult thing is building a relationship with somebody when you've never had that relationship to start with and they're remote. Mm. So I've known Jack since he was, 14, 15. I can tap in, on the phone when we're chatting, on whatever calls, on messages, I can read between the lines. I know what's there. Neve, I've known since she was 13, 14. You know, I didn't coach these people. I was their team manager at that stage. But they would come to me, they would chat. We'd do it. And so I've got to know them. I know the touch points. And for me, that's the, you know, that's a huge enjoyment to watch these people growing up as people. So I know them as people as much as I know them as athletes. And so that's important to me because that's part of the love of what I do. You know, I remember when Charles Van Comeny was head coach for the 2012 Olympics. And his coaching philosophy was totally different. You know, you've got to be completely remote from these people. You must get close to them or whatever. These are people I've watched grow up like that. They're people I care about. And so the relationships that I've had people come in separately that I've got to know through time. And it's just, there's no substitute for spending time and just chatting to people and being there for them and everything else. You build relationships through, quite often through the difficult times, you know, when it's not when everything's going well, it's what we do now, you know, why's that happened, you know? And sometimes through difficult times in their lives as well as they're running. So I try hard to that because people sometimes find it hard to understand because I talk so much. I am incredibly shy. So I find it hard to build relationships. But because I find it hard to build relationships, I've had to learn how to do it by working at it. And so I've worked at it and I've worked hard at it because I know I have to do it. And so it is important because as we touched on, there's so many different, I need feedback and I need to, and I want to know that they're enjoying it. I want to know that they're having fun. And that is really, really important. It's more difficult when you don't see people as often, or you haven't known them as long. But the majority, you soon get into it. And I think one of the great things about our sport is we're all very alike. You know, I couldn't believe it the first time I went abroad and I went to the States on a combined universities tour. And I just met Americans. And, all right, Americans are always outgoing. But it was the runners. We just immediately were the same. We could just talk to one another. Yeah. And you've always got that. You've always got that. And I would say, I'm back with my people. These are my people. And it's a privilege to be around people. I just love it.
Mm.
Sorry, but it's, you know.
No, that's good. It's so true. It's so true. And I think that's why you go down any club and automatically people are bouncing off each other, aren't they? But I think you know, another thing on the remote coaching is not only have you successfully kind of navigated it, but you've also navigated quite a few moving parts where when it be Jack at altitude camp, maybe he's training with a different group out there. You're able to sink him in, and Barnico at Birmingham as well. You're able to sink them in. And I think, so how have you kind of successfully done that without maybe getting frustrated? Or because I'm sure there's been temptation on their side to, you know, pitch ideas to you, and you've obviously had to kind of think about it, give them the nod, or, you know, say no, not this time. So,
yeah, I covers two or three points all in one there that are really important to me. I believe I know what I'm doing. I believe I know the models and how things are going to fit together and everything else, but I'm not arrogant that I believe only precisely every dot and cross in my training is the only way to do things. Mm. I'm a huge believer in people training with other people. I think that's been the AFD success story, if you like, from when I first joined. First national I went to, I saw the first AFD athlete come 100th in the senior man, right? And he came, and that was the first time we'd ever had anybody in the top 100, right? And all of that came from groups training together, mixed ability, mixed ages, male, female, right the way through. So I believe people get stuff. So if Jack's at altitude and there are other people doing stuff, quite often, and particularly during the winter, what people are doing is very, very similar. You know, if we can do stuff and we can fit stuff together and make it work, and most coaches are quite happy to have that relationship because they know I'm non-threatening. I'm not going to come in and try and take over their group or anything like that. That's not how I operate. People come to me. I don't go to them. Yeah. And so I'm really relaxed about people getting involved. I work really closely with Dean Miller up in Birmingham for what Will's stuff's going. As much as possible, I want Will to train with the university. Last year, it was really hard. Post-Christmas, he was getting ready for the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And the Birmingham lot all stopped doing cross-country way before. So he had to do a lot by himself. Still tried to get him to do as much as he could, but I don't feel threatened by any of that. I guess the most extreme version of it was last winter. So Jack and I had sat down, worked out which event we wanted to. We're going to go for the five. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do these things. We built a humongous base for him doing three half marathons in something like 5 weeks or whatever, and vitality thrown in there because he needed to pay the bills and whatever, and it fitted and he was running well. We did some stuff pre-Christmas, made a latish decision to pull out of Liverpool, but we're already starting to do some track stuff, got him sharp outdoors. He did some great things and helped out with Joe Wigfield, did a couple of sessions with him. Trained with Will when Will came back for a session, and then he went to the States because we wanted him at altitude. We wanted him nearby Boston because we wanted, or in America basically, we wanted him to be able to choose the right week for Boston to go and do the right one. And because of his Puma contract, and Puma had been fantastic to both Jack and Will, done brilliant things for both of them, he was able to hook up with Alistair Gregg. And I knew that we were going to do that. I knew that if he was going to get the most from it, it was going to be, I knew Alistair's stuff was a bit different than what I do. I knew if we were going to get the most out of it, I was going to have to tweak a little bit around the edges and do whatever. But if he was going to get the most, he needed to dive in a bit with them as well. So some of the stuff was different, but it was in the right ballpark. And he was training with Paddy and the group there, Paddy Diva and all of that. And so we kept some things back. There were certain sessions we did where we said, no, you're going to do this. But as much as possible, we built this platform where he was just ready. He needed the final knockings of stuff and to be with a really strong group in the environment was the right thing for him. Absolutely the right thing for him. And he flourished in that environment and ran really well. Unfortunately, got COVID, having done the 5K and the 10 didn't go so well. But yeah, I think that's the most extreme where I've done it. And the great thing I've done is I'm a big believer in the development of people, right? And right from a very young age, I would take some of Mick's sessions occasionally. And if he was away at the Eurocross or whatever, and I'd say to people, so what's this session mean? Well, you've got a 400, you've got an 800 there all by itself, with 400 either side of it. What's going on that side of it? Oh, perhaps I meant to run that one quicker. Yeah, you meant to run that one quicker. Why do you think you meant? And so helping people understand. So it's not just that I've got a view for how all the bits fit together. My athletes understand that. And from a very, very early stage, they need to understand what we're trying to, because it's not my training. It's not my running. It's theirs. I'm in there facilitating everything else. They have to understand. And because they understand, I trust Jack to turn up to a session where we might be doing what mine set or somebody else set, and somebody changes it. And he will change it because he knows what we're doing, or he'll keep bits of it because he knows what we're doing. I want athletes who are self-sufficient, who understand. So that's a huge, huge part of my philosophy, is that I want, it's great because it plays to my, I want them to develop as people. I'm giving them life skills to understand how to pull things together, how to get the big picture. And once you've got the big picture, you can fill the detail in. The session is just detail. Yeah. And so it's really important. So they have an ability, Jack will understand. All right, I'll dial off this one because I'm not feeling so great today. We only wanted one harder workout this week. That's not working. Or this is a harder one. That's not going quite as hard. I want to push on. I'll do an extra rep on it or something like that. 90% of the time we're doing exactly what's set out, but he needs to be able to do that. He needs to be out. And Neve, through the years, she would never have dreamt of doing it when she was a young girl. But she's, you know, she's a very capable young woman, and she understands what we're trying to do. The others will do that. And I don't give race plans that say, 563 meters kick. We talk through scenarios. We talk through the types of races that might happen. We talk through what decisions you might make. They have to be strong enough to make those decisions. They have to be capable to make those decisions. You cannot spoon feed things. You will not become an elite athlete with stuff spoon fed to you. Yeah, you have to be able to start taking it. Yes, I'm there. Yes, I will give them all the fact. Yes, I will give them my opinions. But at the end of the day, it's their running. They'll make decisions. And they have to be able to do that. Otherwise, you can't be an elite athlete. You just can't. I hate to see this kind of, I'm kind of complete anti to the Fergie type football coaching. I don't throw things at people. Yeah, there's no cups on the sideline when I'm there. If they want to do it, they'll do it. I'll tell them what's best. If they choose not to do it, then they won't compete as well. Yeah, if they get it wrong. But a lot of the time, they'll come with good ideas. So, I actively encourage people to come with the ideas. It's not that, some don't want to hear that. I want to hear what they think, because it means they're thinking about their running. They might have got it wrong, and I'll help them understand what's right and what's wrong. But it's hugely important to me that they are capable athletes and capable human beings as well. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just following on from that, take someone like Jack. How long do you think it took him to, I guess, adjust to this way of thinking about his training? Was he someone who was, I don't know, when we've spoken to Jack before, he kind of is almost a student of the sport himself. So I'm sure he had some of his own ideas. But at what point did you think this relationship is really starting to flourish in the way we were both working together?
Quite early on with Jack, because that's his personality, that's his style. And I think even when he came to me, as I say, in that very short period before he went to San Francisco, he came because of that. A lot of the ones who've known me through time have come because they know that's how I operate. They know that's how I work. They that's how the relationship develops. For those who've come since, some have come, you know, the others, those who I haven't known since they were youngsters have come because of relationship. You know, Dan Jarvis came to me through COVID, and it was because he was training with Jack, and I think it was just he wanted to do Jack's training. But to start with, it was different. But we learn to work together. Dan's a very different personality, and you know, he's. But we worked well together, and that's something PB immediately got a medal in the British champs in the chase. But I think someone like Jack, it's there, and you're nursing the shoots, as it were. You're helping him get to a stage where he'll make his own decisions. Yeah, and he needs to make his own decisions in life and everything else. And it's really important. And it's important to me he does that. So, like every, but they're all going on the journey that I've been on through life. You learn stuff, you get stuff, and you make yourself better. Yeah, and so, as I say, I think some of it is people have come expecting to be like that. Others, it's more of a challenge, and they want me to do more for them, and I do more for them. They don't feel as comfortable. They come from a more command and control type background in terms of wanting to be told things. And then we have a subtly different relationship. You know, I've expressed, I think what I'm trying to get across to you guys in all my answers is that there's a framework, but there's a hell of a lot of flexibility in it, because it has to be different for each individual. It has to be different for their physical capabilities. It has to be different for their mental and psychological, and it has to be different for their life setup and the things that are important to them in their lives and whatever. So I work within a very flexible framework. What I'm giving you is the core principles, and then you adapt them to each individual. And some will be more down the line of making decisions on their training. But, you know, fundamentally, they're doing what we set, but it will change. They've got the capability. Others will be much more hard and fast than what we do. But it's different approaches for different people. And that's what I try to do, is try to coach the person, not some idealized athlete that, oh, you ought to be like this, and therefore you, that's what you do. No such person exists. It's just rubbish.
On that, do you think that limits the amount of people you can work with to have that, you know, because take Jack and Will, for example, from what we've heard from speakers of both and, you know, the circuit, they're quite different in the way they currently train, at least. And so, yeah, to not, it would be tempting, I presume, for you to kind of go, well, look, Jack's a couple years ahead of you, Will. He's very successful. We'll just feed you basically everything he's done. But my understanding is that isn't really the case. You might be able to correct me on that. But does that make it, what I'm saying is as well, that surely that limits the amount of people you can work with.
I think there's two quite separate things. The number of people I can work with, I think, is a very valid point. To an extent, when I started coaching, because I've wanted to for so long, there's a little bit of the little boy in the sweetie shop. The opportunity to coach anybody who came to talk to me, I was desperate to coach them, because it was great fun. I'm finding more and better ways to do it. One of the downsides of what I've got is that you don't turn up at 7 o'clock at AFD and my group's there. Or you don't turn up in Bushy at 10 o'clock and my group's there. So that actually, that's more of a limitation of not being able to pull a group. If there was more of a group structure that I could do, then that would enable me to increase the numbers. When I say they're each individual, actually, if you look at it, a lot of them train together because I want them to train together when they've got an opportunity. But also there's a common thread. There'll be a core to what we're doing in that week, especially during the winter. I think the time that's more difficult with more people is in the summer, because everybody's doing races at different times. They're all doing different types of races. What you do through the winter is pretty damn similar. Mm. Yeah. Yes, there's a limitation, but there's a limitation on numbers anybody can coach. In reality, if you're going to do it properly, nobody can coach an infinite number of people. It just doesn't work. I guess the other one is, and this is how much, you know, I'd like to get out there because it's important to me. It's touched on by the Will versus Jack thing. There's an expression, I think it's an Einstein first said it, and then Oasis used it for an album title. It's called Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, right? And it was Einstein saying, I didn't come out of nowhere and do relativity. You know, there was Newton did all this stuff. There was Copernicus did this stuff. I build on top of it. All the athletes I've got, I'm building on top of what came previously. And I'm always really negative when I see people slagging off previous coaches and whatever. The athletes I've got, I'm hugely privileged to have great people to work with and people who've been really lucky with the types of people they've had as coaches before. So I'm building on top. So I start, I don't immediately say, right, forget what's gone before, bang, you do this. So Will is going along the same path. It might not quite seem it to people from the outside, but he is getting to the same path as Jack, but he started from a different point. Even though there's a similar output, there's a guy called Trevor Raggett who people don't know of as much, but the man got phenomenal numbers of people into the sport and took them to a higher level. I know there's a lot of AFD people. He did stuff at Windsor. He moved his group between AFD and Windsor a few times. Both Jack and Will started with him. Trevor got Will all the way to, well, I started getting involved in the year before he went to university because Trevor asked me to do some longer. Trevor always stopped coaching people as soon as they were getting to senior ranks and he would take them through. So Will, when I got him, I think it blows people's minds. He'd already been to Eurocross at 16. He'd already won SIAB. He'd never done a long run. He'd never done a track session, right? So you don't go and break somebody like that. Don't get me wrong, the stuff that Trevor had him doing, he was doing three sessions a week and they were fast and whatever, but it was grass and whatever. And the steady run he did, I asked him what he did, one steady run a week. And when he told me how fast it was, I said, well, that's at least tempo based. If not, that's a race you're doing each week, Will. So there's been a journey with Will that we're on. Yeah. And yes, he's doing smaller volumes and whatever. But actually, if you look at where Jack was at Will's age, there's, you know, Will's still only 21. When Jack was 21, I've heard him on the podcast. He admitted he was messing around at some but he'd also gone early from Trevor into Mick's group. So he'd had 2-3 years of Mick stuff before I went anywhere near him. And then he'd been to the States. So it was a very different point to take him forwards. Will's at a point, and yeah, Will is going to benefit from loads of stuff we've done, but he's going to benefit from even more stuff as we go along and as we do stuff with Will. Yeah, so there's stuff he's got. He's a slightly different athlete. There's things he's got. He's a phenomenal talent, I know. And yeah, he's just a great guy. But he's a different point. He is going the same pathway in terms of the principles and everything else. It's just he's at a different point. Does that make sense? You know, it's
absolutely,
just
man.
People look at it and say, well, he's only doing about 50 miles a week. And yeah, and he's only just started doubling. Yeah, but when I had him, he was only training 3 days a week. So we got him to 4 and 5 and 6 and we've added stuff in and whatever. And to be honest, could it go faster? Maybe. But when he's winning European titles and he's running 13:19,
yeah,
I think we're going fast enough.
So here's a question. I feel like progressing people very gradually, like Jack, like Will, who, you know, both of them have represented GB at a junior level. Is it a lot trickier to do if you've got someone who is, you know, let's take a 21-year-old who's a 15-minute 5K runner. It's a lot trickier to hold them back because there's so much scope for them to, you know, improve. And, you know, I don't know if you've had experience with that. Or your advice around that, you know, holding kids, you must see it all the time at club level.
Yeah, I do. And sometimes the biggest problem with that 15-minute 21-year-old is, well, when can I be a 13-minute? and it's that's not going to happen overnight. Even when they're very young children coming to AFD and they get involved in mixed group and do stuff and I'll have a joke with them and their parents and say, distance, if you're impatient, go and be a sprinter. Yeah, it's different. And actually, that's the personality type. Our type of personality is the ones who are going to be good actually understand that. And they do lap it up. I've since all my time in the sport, I've known people who've been distance runners who really body shape and everything else for sprinters or whatever. But their mentality was to be a distance runner. And I've seen the inverse, really talented youngsters who just don't have it to be distance runners. So people will listen. I've taken a woman who's come back to the sport, having had a lot of time out and being ill and injured, whatever, through in a year, came to me and done 3:09 for a marathon at London and was really chuffed to get inside 3:10. Harriet Preedy, she's now... this year at London ran 2:48 a year later. And if anything, I kind of, yes, it's been more intense and whatever, it's not a huge increase on what she'd done in volume stuff. And I think she was kind of expecting that, but we're taking her on a journey that's there. The low hanging fruit is there quite quickly, I find, even with the 15 minute 21 year old, you'll look at it and actually, if you do the right things and get the right things right, those improvements will come quite quickly anyway. You don't have to throw the kitchen sink at them. There is no point throwing the kitchen sink at them. They just have to trust that process. And that's a big thing. I am always incredibly flattered when somebody asks me to coach them, because you're taking the most... they're asking you to help the most important thing in their lives. Yeah. So for them to trust me that I'm going to get it right, that's a big ask. Whether you're an elite, right at the elite level, or really good club runner, trust that I'm going to get them there. I have to earn their trust. You know, people don't give trust in life. It's a hard thing to earn and a really easy thing to lose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to, and what's useful is I can drop in examples. I can drop in names of what's happened and say, look, they didn't get there by being silly. They didn't get there by jumping all at once. Some people will jump more than others and whatever, but the ones who make mistakes, the ones who try to go too quickly. Yeah. And there are examples of people who go from nothing to everything very quickly. And you have to recognize that and take that opportunity. But a lot of the time people want to go too quickly. Yeah. And you just have to help them. But yeah, it's really important to me to have people who I've known since they're kids who I genuinely care about, then say to me, will you help me with my coach and coaching me? It's just, wow. That to me, that's living the dream. It's just brilliant. Why wouldn't I be inspired? And so that continual, and it's interesting, Mick has never let go coaching youngsters. Ron Stonehouse never coached anybody outside a club environment, took three people to the Olympics, you know, medalists, Commonwealth champion, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that refresh each time of the enthusiasm that's coming through, those people coming through, all that stuff coming through, that energy you get from it. I get energy back. I give energy to my athletes and it comes back in spades. Mm. Yeah, it comes back. And it's tiring sometimes. It's very tiring sometimes. You know, Matt, it's just, oh. But I wouldn't be any other way.
No.
It's just, you know, your dad still helps people, you're doing stuff, you know, it's something it's hard to let go of. It really is hard to let go of. It's a drug and it's just, yeah, it's a very healthy drug.
Absolutely. And Tim, I think that's a great point to end on, but just finally, and I think I know the answer to this, who's gonna win the road relays this weekend?
There you go. I'm team manager for the women. So we've got a decent teams out for the women. The men's, it's always more challenging with the men because we've got a lot of people with other things they need to do in the and it's harder for us. We're not an environment that naturally has a lot of people move to Aldershot for work. So if you look at our teams, particularly on the men's side, they're either ones we've grown up, the Jacks of the world, the Wills of the world, or they're ones who we acquired kind of when they mix coach them, particularly in a university setup. We have very, very few, unlike, say, a Leeds or a Belgrave or Cambridge or Highgate, some of those have youngsters coming through, especially in Cambridge and whatever, but they have people move to the area. So I think the men, I think I'd be going out on a limb to say I think the men are likely to win, but Leeds are always so powerful on the men's side. They've just got such depth these days.
They're
hard to work to be.
Yeah, I think one thing I just wanted to ask you as well before we finish up is, has it got harder for not just the likes of Jack and Will, but also just everyone to, I guess, immerse themselves in the club system? You mentioned there about you're not getting many seniors down at AFD anymore. Is it getting harder? I wonder what the landscape's like at AFD.
Yeah, it is. And I think it is and it isn't, because especially if they've grown up through the club system, it's a buzz to be in the championships. It's a buzz to be there. So they will still come back to it. On the other hand, they have other priorities. And that's the difficult thing. It's that balance between, so some of them have got to earn a living, to be frank, you know, and it's getting that balance right. I think a lot of our seniors are a bit like my coaching. They're dotted around the place. So they've been youngsters and they've now moved somewhere else. So they might be in the St. Mary's area. They might be somewhere else. So they don't get together quite so often. So that's the harder thing to get, I think, is getting that together. That's more difficult. Mike Boucher does a brilliant job at keeping everybody in line and getting them all together and enthusing them and everything else. So, yeah, and again, another massive enthusiast of the sport. So it is harder, and but we will consistently put decent teams out. And at the moment, we've got another generation coming through. We've had some phenomenal juniors coming through.
Yeah,
you know, James Dargan's gone off to the States, but Joe O'Connell and all those other lads coming through, you'll see on Saturday, our AMB teams are chock full of those guys in that generation. And that's really exciting because they're really excited to be doing that. So we'll always have that refresh of folk. And then if we can top it up with a Will or a Jack or, you know, Ben Bradley's running Saturday and stuff like that, you top up with people like that, you're always going to have a decent team. Occasionally, you have a really stonking team and, yeah, it'll come together. But, yeah, we'll have a great time on Saturday, whatever happens. And I'll run around like a headless chicken as usual, trying to support everybody at 15 different places, especially now they overlap the kids' races. It's just,
it's chaos. Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have a great time.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks so much for chatting to us, Tim. Much appreciated.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on. It's been great fun. Thank you. I really enjoyed it and enjoy listening to all the things you boys do. And it's important we've got somewhere like this for people to come to and listen to on a regular, you know, did you hear what happened in the pod today? So massive credit to you guys as well.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Extreme cold weather advisory in effect this morning.
You're a contractor. You have a contract.
All right, guys, come on. Let's do this.
A little snow and ice isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.